an American, a Canadian, and a Brit walk into a bar. But this isn't a bad joke. This is Ladies of Valhalla.
Hey there everyone, and welcome to Ladies of Valhalla. My name is Sarah and I'll be your host today. I'd like to welcome you all to this member of the Talking Comics podcast family. This month we'll be not only taking a dive into the ongoing comic book series Crowded, but we'll also be joined by the art team on the book, Rose Stein and Ted Brand. But first off, please allow me to introduce my wonderful co-hosts. In alphabetical order, we have the Covertina of Churches, the Nabia of Nature Photography, the Hariti of Hikes, Miss Bronwyn Kelly-Say. And sitting to the other metaphorical side of me is the Pramudita of Purple Hair, the RTO of Audis, the Devona of Decking, Miss Jessica Schaefer. And joining us this week, we also have the Morpheus of Mattresses, the Puck of Princeless, the Icarus of Inks, it's Mr. Ted Brand.
Yeah.
And the Verbia of Vita, the Leto of Line, the Ushas of Unstoppable Wasp, it's Rose Stein. How are we all doing today then, everybody?
Oh yeah. Good.
How are we? Yeah, pretty good.
I'm going to apologise at this point for any background noise that is coming from the flat that I'm recording in. There is quite a large motorsport event happening near me. And unfortunately, but unsurprisingly, because England, it's chucking it down with rain. So everybody's leaving the event about 3 hours early. So if you hear engine noises or popping sounds, it's a disturbingly large amount of supercars driving past, which sounds really cool, but I'm on the first floor and can't see any of them. But Aww. Yeah, if you hear any strange noises, I'm very sorry. It's not my fault. It's Goodwood.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Ted and Ro, thank you very, very much for joining us today. I know it was a little bit of a last minute change of plan. Obviously, we have been in discussion with you, but thank you for coming on to talk about Crowded.
Our pleasure.
So what we normally do is we just kind of run through what the book is about. We give some general impressions on it and then we let everybody have a little spoiler alert. So if I just read, this is actually the blurb off the back, I believe, of the first trade paperback. Issue 7 did come out. By the time this is released, it will have come out 2 weeks ago. But the basic concept of the book is, 10 minutes in the future, the world runs on an economy of job shares and apps, while crowdfunding has evolved into Reaper, a platform for assassination that's trickled down from politicians, celebrities and CEOs to everyday life and all its petty resentments. A world where anyone with enough backers and the money they contribute can kill anyone else. Like Charlie Ellison, who up until now has led a quiet, normal life, until she wakes up to find herself the target of a Reaper campaign with $1 million on her head. Hunted by all of Los Angeles, Charlie hires Vita, the lowest-rated bodyguard on the Defend app. As the campaign picks up speed and Vita takes out incompetent civilians and aspirational assassins on their tail, she and Charlie will have to figure out who wants Charlie dead and why before the campaign's 30 days or their lives are over. Now, anyone who has heard me on the main Talking Comics podcast will know that I am a bit of a fangirl about Crowded. I'm a really big fan of Christopher Sabella, who writes the book, and I was getting a little bit overexcited a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the fact that Crowded was coming back. Jess, can you give us some just kind of general impressions about how you feel about Crowded before we jump in with all the questions for Ted and Ro?
Sure. Yeah, no,
clearly, if you've heard me as well, I have talked about Crowded. When the book first came out, I remember reading the first issue and talking about it on the podcast, and I was like, yes. I'm like, I'm here for this. This is, there's a dog. Listen, I'm really easy to please. You put a fun dog in it, and I am like there. You know, now the characters are great. Like we were talking before the podcast started, like, I have everything that Charlie is wearing. I just had to order a pink wig to do her cosplay. Like, I, you know, it made me crack up. It's funny. It's smart. I absolutely loved it. I've raved about it on the other show. I was such a fangirl that I didn't even really speak to Chris Sabella when he was on the show, and I just was like, so yeah, no, I am huge fan. Loved every minute of this book. So
awesome. Bronwyn, what do you think about Crowded?
Oh, yes, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I mean, obviously, I've heard you guys talk about this quite a lot, so it had already been in my to-be-read pile. And so I picked it up, and I powered through it, because I was just like, oh, okay, yeah. And what a concept. It was so much fun. But, it's fantastic. I didn't anticipate getting so sucked into it. It's just so much fun. The presentation of it is amazing. The colors, the design. I'm particularly fond of the character designs in this one. It's so much fun. The facial expressions are hysterical. They're just the backgrounds are really funny. I like reading all of the stuff in the backgrounds. The app names are really hysterical. I particularly like how the characters blush, especially whenever Charlie's around. Dog. Oh my God, dog. Dog is so funny. And I don't know how dog came to be one of my favorite characters, but like truly dog is one of my favorite characters. I don't know. It's just so much fun to read. And for something that can actually be quite gory from time to time, the best descriptor of it is fun. You know, I wouldn't have put those two things together necessarily, but it works.
Awesome. Yeah. So, spoiler alert, what we're going to do is just kind of go through some questions, kind of chat to Ted and Ro about the book. I'm quite excited, actually, because this is the first time that we've had an art team on. We've had writers on before, but we've never really had sort of an actual art team come and talk to us. One of the first things I wanted to ask, in the back matter of issue one, Ted, you say that you fell instantly in love with the idea of Crowded when Chris pitched the book to you, which kind of begs the question, how did he pitch it and how did he make the approach to the pair of you as an art team?
Well, he didn't approach us as such. It was more matchmaking via our then friend and now editor, Juliet Capra.
She's still our friend.
Well, yeah.
She's also the editor.
Yeah. But yeah, because then it was, you know, it'd been a couple of months since we'd managed to get any Marvel work, and we were kind of starting to get a bit worried about money. And so we just mentioned it to her that if she knew anybody who was looking for artists, then
we were available.
Yeah, let us know. And so she came back a couple of days later and said, well, actually, Chris Sabella is looking for artists right now. We're like, oh, okay. So, she kind of brokered a Skype call between us and Chris. And yeah, he told us at the start of the call that he had five ideas that were looking for artists. The first one was what turned into Cold War. The second one was Crowded, and we didn't hear any of the others.
Yeah. So did he kind of pitch it to you as what then became the blurb of the book, or what was it that he kind of said to you that made you go, yes, this is it, this is the one that we want to work on?
I think it was kind of similar to the blurb.
It was, yeah. I mean, because the blurb is quite a vague proposition tonally, and that's what it was, at the time. And then, because we instantly saw the potential for comedy, and it was only later that we realised that the initial impression that Chris had of the story was much more serious and a bit bleaker.
Because he basically pitched it as like a cross-country road trip that involved a lot of dodging being shot at and stuff. And we automatically thought, hey, comedy.
Yeah, when you put it like that, it's kind of Smokey and the Bandit style. I have to say, bleak is not a word that I would associate with Crowded, with the way that the pair of you have drawn it, which kind of leads nicely into another question that I have, which is how much sort of input do you have when it comes to things like character design, obviously for main characters like Charlie and Vita, but also other characters who don't appear as often, like the mansplaining nerds that crop up in issue 2, who are some of my favourite characters ever from comics because they're just ludicrous. But where does the sort of back and forth come between you and the writer when it actually comes to creating those characters?
Visually, we have total input.
Yeah, there's only a couple of characters that have had any sort of back and forth at all, like Cersei. There was a tiny bit on Trotter, specifically what his costume was going to be.
Yeah.
I think that's about it.
Yeah, like generally, any time we've come up with a design, they've said, yes, great. Like Cersei was a difficult one to pin down because it took us a long time to really understand what the character was about, really. Mm. And so until we knew that, like we had no way of knowing. Cause, like, one of the things that we've had with Chris is getting descriptions of who the character is rather than what they look like. So then we get to completely set the parameters. The problem with Cersei is that because she's such a complicated character, then it took a while to work out who she was, and which is eventually, in fact, the reason why Cersei is the way she is because we were just having endless back and forths where, you know, we would send off a round of designs and they'd come back with notes, and so we'd try to work to those notes and we'd send off the designs and they'd come back with more notes. And so in the end, we just said, well, how about she doesn't have a fixed look?
Mm. That's cool.
Because, yeah, I mean, we couldn't come up with anything at all as a permanent look that we were happy with, and so were Chris and Juliet on the other side.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I could think of that I definitely wanted to keep going was the same shades and that green lipstick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we wanted to make sure there was enough that she was always identifiable as her from the get-go. But other than that, everything changes precisely because there was the one character we've had any like kind of substantial notes and pushback on from the initial concepts, and it seemed the easiest way of squaring that circle was to not commit to a look.
As for the nerds, they were basically described, we've got four teenage nerds, and we just went, okay. Just going to draw these guys.
That's amazing.
As someone who spends a lot of time in her local comic shop, which is also a gaming shop, yes, those are four teenage nerds.
And yeah, nailed it.
Yes. I've met every one of them.
They come in packs like that, too. Every time I would stand at the register for the comic book store, they would walk in. I'd be like, yep.
Yeah, I think that's actually one of my favorite things about this book is visually everything looks kind of familiar, even though, like, I've never been to Los Angeles and I've clearly never been in this situation. So.
Well, us neither, that's, on both counts.
So that's pretty impressive.
I think nerd is quite a universal language.
Right?
when you're designing characters, especially ones like that you have just like such free rein on, do you ever base them on people you know or people you've met, or is there ever kind of a chance that someone's going to open up one of your books and go, hold on a minute, I know that person? Or do you have to sort of take care to not do that and just make them up completely?
Sometimes can put people in from TV shows or something, because in the police station there are in the background some characters from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes. Nine-Nine.
Exactly. And we've had a couple of Chris and Juliet's requested we put in a couple of people they know. But most of the time, it's just a case of I need a weird-looking person. If someone is particularly described as being an oddball, I just go onto Google and type in some random words to try and find some odd-looking people. Just go like, nice. Send me to a cartoon.
Brilliant.
That's amazing.
Odd-looking people.
Yes. Google to the rescue.
Listen, that's how you do everything. Like, if you need reference, it's Google. Google is your friend.
Google looking up mug shots particularly.
Nice.
She gets some very odd looking people in what people seem to think about Googleable mug shots. No one looks their best in a mug shot.
It seems it's a whole side of the internet I wasn't aware of. I'm now going to have to go and Google mug shots.
I mean, I've Googled reference photos of, you know, microbiological plates before to take a look at, you know, colonies and bacteria and things like that. I guess I'd never really thought about looking at people before. It's what you know, right? That's cool.
So, and talking kind of about reference, do you use reference photos to get poses? Because there are some crazy situations that the main characters get themselves into, and some strange poses that they have to do. Or do you end up having to kind of get into the poses that you want to get those reference photos? Or does Google just save you every time from having to look like you're jumping out of windows carrying trunks, for example?
I take a lot of photos of Ted. We've also got these little posable models for some things that Ted can't do, like jump out of a window. But a lot of the like conversational stuff with body language is me telling Ted, stand like this. And then I take a picture on my phone and it's like, ah, yes, that's helpful.
That's awesome. The answer I was hoping for.
That's kind of how it goes.
Amazing.
I'm not an artist. I have absolutely zero talent. Can't even draw a stick person. So I do just sometimes look at characters and go, how do they know? How do they know where all the bits of the person go? And that sounded stranger than it was supposed to.
Sorry. I know when you said it, I couldn't hold it. I was trying to be quiet. I'm sorry.
I was about to say I meant in an anatomical way, but that's just making it worse, and now I'm doubling down on the weird.
Have you not met a human being?
Apparently not.
Sometimes the parts aren't where you think they're meant to be.
That makes me feel a lot better.
I feel like this conversation is getting worse.
I disagree entirely.
I think this is a perfectly normal and reasonable conversation that is, yeah, I'm actually just going to move swiftly along. I don't really see how I'm going to get us out of this without sounding a bit strange. So I'm going to start talking about Vita. I absolutely love Vita. I love the way that she looks. I love the fact that she isn't a traditional feminine figure, and one thing that I have noticed, she does have quite a, I don't really want to say a masculine presenting figure, because like her figure is just a figure, she's a woman with a body, therefore it's a woman's body, but in most media we don't get a lot of different body shapes. A lot of people who work in media haven't realized that there are other shapes that aren't just skinny with big boobs. Was that a deliberate choice on your part when it came to Vita and making her look that particular shape? And did you realize at the time how much that sort of representation would mean to people that read the books? Because I've been doing a bit of background research and kind of looking around what people have been saying about the books, and I've seen so many people commenting on the fact that they love seeing somebody who looks like Vita in a book, because it means that they can see someone who looks like them.
I can honestly say that that's what you'd call a really happy accident. Like, it wasn't done from a representational point of view at all. Mm. It was just...
That's how we thought of her.
Yeah. There wasn't any other way she could be. It's like, it sounds really glib and like magical thinking to say this, but apart apart from the very first sketchy character designs that we roughed out, like, you know, which were
just completely wrong.
They were thoughtless. Like, literally, they were thoughtless, just done for something to do. But the second we actually sat down and thought about Vita, like, she literally popped into my head fully formed.
Mm.
And it was just very, very obvious what she had to be based on her characteristics. And so then I just kind of did a very, very loose, crap sketch, handed it over to Rogue to clean up, and that was it.
That's awesome. Yeah. The fact that there was only ever one Vita for you. But yeah, it is so good to see a character that looks like that. And also the fact that you get kind of an explanation in the story as the fact that she does work out and you do see her exercising. And it's not a sort of She-Hulk situation where she doesn't have to have the muscles. They just magically appear because of blood transfusions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Although that is true. Although, like, we're also kind of... part of the aim for me was that Vita was going to be a John McClane, basically.
Yes.
Someone who... she's just made out of granite. And there's no apparent healthy living on her part. Yet somehow... her muscles are rock hard and she's terrifying.
She's also my role model, and you just made that even better.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was genuinely one of the touchstones I was thinking of when she was being designed. Honestly.
Well, throughout the book so far, she's been maintained through cigarettes and coffee.
And anger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She reminds me of a lot of people I know.
That's my breakfast. That's what I just had for breakfast. Coffee.
She's so familiar to me. I love her so much because she is somebody that I know. Like, she, and not in a, you know, assassin way, but obviously. But just, she's familiar looking, and she, you know, like, I know, it's very nice. It's very nice to see a different style of person and a different face in comics. So that is, it is a beautiful thing to see her. She's a great character.
We are very proud of her.
Yeah.
I'm also glad that you clarified not in an assassin kind of a way.
Look, I'm Canadian, okay?
So with a huge number of your panels, you put a lot of detail into the backgrounds. I've heard it called the chicken fat before. I don't know if that's an actual comics term or if it's just something that Bob calls it. But like shop names and posters and things like that. Also, all of the TV shows, America's Next Top Bottom is.
Oh my god! I died.
It cracks me up every time. Do you actually kind of plan those out beforehand when you're looking through the script, or do you just sort of sit there and start drawing the panel and just go, "I know what I'm going to put in the background of this one"?
The latter.
Yeah, sometimes we're like, oh, we've got a space, we need something. Quick, think of a really weird joke.
Can we take a minute for Kickstarter?
That was one of the ones.
Yeah.
I did.
And Lager for Thin Life. I really liked Lager for Thin Life. That was amazing, too.
It works better in British English because it's pronounced lager over here.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. Okay.
I'm crying.
My face legit hurts right now.
Now, talking about these little background bits and pieces, I'm gonna say something really spoilery, so if anyone hasn't read issue 7, please just beware, because I'm gonna mention the final page of issue 7. Firstly, can I just say, Marie's Kondo's minimum space, maximum joy. Absolute genius.
Thank you. I'm very proud of that one.
Yeah,
that's,
well, you should
so
be.
So good. But in the background in that panel, there's a little billboard, a little pink billboard that says ReaperCon. Now, is that like a little hint of some trouble that's going to be happening in the near future? Or is that just a little bit of wishful thinking for lots of gunfighting from me? Or are you not allowed
somewhere
to tell
in
us?
The middle.
Somewhere in the middle, yeah.
awesome, because I just saw that and I was like, oh, a convention of people who want to murder other people. How amazing.
ReaperCon will feature, but not in the way you're expecting.
Oh. Mysterious.
Now I'm even more intrigued.
Seriously.
Possibly my greatest claim to fame as well is the fact that I actually appear in one of those background bits in the book.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm in issue one of Crowded. Check me out.
That's exciting.
You didn't even know it.
I did not.
Well, I say that I am. I'm not a former a former username of mine. Christabella put a shout out on Twitter saying, if you have a username that you don't use anymore and you want to be someone that backed Charlie's campaign. And I was like, oh, pick me! Pick me.
That's amazing. You killed Charlie.
I have one little quick question about like some fluff, you know, background stuff. In issue, I think it's 5, after they leave by Furious, is Hanzo Shimada from Overwatch up in the one panel? Is that who that was based off of? There is a guy in a suit that has one sleeve.
The bodyguard guy that's part of the Trotter entourage.
Yeah, is that, yeah, like he shows up, I think, yeah, in like in 5, yes. Like,
I just wanted to draw a hot Asian bodyguard guy and it turned into him by accident.
Okay, I am a huge Overwatch fan. I play every day. I scream it. Like, I just, that was my, I like saw it. I'm like, this is my one question I need to ask.
We've barely like seen anything to do with Overwatch, much less never played it. So, you know, it was coincidental.
I do think that Tree colored him to look like.
That's possible. Yeah, because Tree is an Overwatch fan.
Okay, yeah, because he has that suit. That's like a skin of his in the game, and I saw it, and I was like, ah!
Yeah, I think she saw the opportunity and just took it.
That's amazing.
Amazing, I love it.
Love it.
That kind of actually leads nicely into one of my questions about colours. Do you have much input into the colours on the book, or do you just leave those decisions down to Triona Farrell, the colourist on the book? Do you sort of send her the artwork and say, we want this to look like this, or is it just a case of here's artwork, run with it?
Basically, it's just here's artwork. The only kind of colour things that we've had any input on is like Vita's jacket is yellow, Charlie's hair's pink. And then there was Chris and Juliet were like, Bifurious needs to have this colour lighting.
Yeah, but by and large.
I love Bifurious.
Yeah. Oh my God, me too.
Bifurious.
I love it so much.
Yeah, by and large, like we 100% trust Tree to know what to do with any given situation. Like,
she definitely knows more about this than us.
Yeah, and I mean, like, because if you look at the incredible colouring job she did in the latter half of issue 7, like, none of that was requested, none of it was scripted. That was all her taking initiative, and that's exactly why we asked her to be part of the book at the start, because she's very, very good at her job.
Yes, yes, it's beautiful. Yeah,
the color work is incredible.
There is that sort of double page spread when they're having the fight on the train that just goes through the rainbow as it's going around, and it's absolutely beautiful. If anyone is listening to this that hasn't somehow read Crowded yet, please do go out and pick it up if you haven't yet, because honestly, the colors are absolutely stunning. And it's really making me want to dye my hair pink again. I've got to stop looking at the book.
Yeah, no, I need.
I didn't have pink. I didn't have pink. I did purple yesterday, so that's what happened. I was reading. I'm like, yeah, my hair can't be blonde anymore. This is boring. I'm like, what do we have in the sink? Like, oh, purple, great. In you go.
I know. Blue's the only one that stays in my hair right now. Pink doesn't last, unfortunately. But I'll get a wig. That'll be good.
Yeah.
Kind of speaking about the team and the way that you work together, one of the many things I love about Crowded is that all of the creative team contribute to the crowdsourced letters pages, which you don't always see in books. Quite often it's just the editor or the writer who will respond to letters. Was that something that you decided as a team you all wanted to do, or was it something that like one person said, I would like everyone to contribute to this? How did that kind of come about?
It wasn't either, really. It was like when we started getting letters, Chris just said,
do you want to?
Yeah. Does anybody want to respond to any of these And like, so he gave us the letters that he was going to be printing, and then everybody had free reign over if they responded at all or which ones they responded to, which is why, you know, it breaks down the way it does.
Awesome.
That's cool.
Because it's really good to kind of get everyone's different takes on things.
And it kind of suits the book to have that crowd kind of feel to it from the creative team as well as kind of from the fan base. It really works.
So something that we kind of haven't mentioned yet is kind of something that I sometimes struggle to get my head around, because as I said, I'm not an artist, but in issue 7 of Crowded, Chris Sabella made a point, which he then reinforced on his Twitter, of moving the schedule of names around in the credits and naming both of you as line art as opposed to a sort of pencil and ink split that there had been on previous issues. Is that something that you had kind of spoken to him about? Was it something that you'd like to see more of?
It comes from the trade, actually, because that's how we're credited in the trade. Because he asked us specifically how we wanted to be represented there. And by that point, there have been so many things of people making assumptions about which of us had done what, which often wasn't accurate.
At some point, weren't you credited as the colorist?
Well, yeah, but I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about just like people who discussed the line art were often getting wrong who contributed to what, because there are times when, you know, there are times when I just ink what you've put down. There are times when I redraw it.
Yeah.
There are some bits that we work on together, some bits that are purely yours or mine, or, you know, it's very difficult to separate out.
Yeah.
So it just seemed like the better answer was to not.
I must admit, I come from probably a generation of people whose entire knowledge of comic book art originated with Chasing Amy, which probably is a terrible place to get our ideas about comic book art from. I'd like to say I've grown as a person since then, and I've learned more about the craft of it, and I don't refer to inkers as tracers. I really hope that people actually get that reference, because I know for a fact that Bella listens to this and she'll just be sitting there going, I don't know what that is. Bella, don't watch Chasing Amy. You're not old enough yet.
Yeah, no. Probably not. That is not for Bella. Hi, Bella. Love you. Don't
Hi,
you
Bella.
Dare. Don't you
You're
dare,
only
Bella.
16. Don't even think about it.
She's already there.
But yes, I know that Jess had a question kind of about your art process, and this seems quite a good time. Jess is our resident artist. I should point
Hi.
That one out.
Hi, how are you? It's just a general, you know, and the topic comes up. I worked in a comic book store for a long time, and the topic comes up a lot between people in comic book stores, between people in the art world. I want your opinion on traditional pen and inks versus digital.
I mean, are we talking like for us specifically or in general?
Yeah, no, I want your opinion on it. How do you guys feel about it? Like, because I know it's a very like some people, I know I have people come in and like, this digital art, it's terrible, blah, blah, blah. They get very upset about it. But like for me, I'm a digital artist. So like, you know.
Yeah, those Luddites can go screw themselves.
Yeah, okay. That's, you know. You get what I'm saying. It's just something that I know I have had many conversations about with people in stores. So I just love to hear other people's takes.
I really don't like working digitally for me, but the idea that I would like claim that my way is better than anyone else's or sit in judgment of them is disgusting, honestly.
No, I agree. Yeah.
No, I am not a fan of working digitally generally. Like, in a couple of hardware generations, that will likely change. But at the moment, I don't like it. But,
okay.
You know.
Whereas I work exclusively digitally because I am so dang messy. And that's the only way we'd be able to get something that Ted could actually read.
So. Okay. See, now I find that really interesting that you're like digital and then he's like, that's pretty cool. I'm digital. I'm a graphic designer, so I work exclusively digitally. I have, you know, I love to draw, but like again, I'm also a disaster, so I'm on the digital side.
Yeah, like there's a lot to recommend digital stuff, and I wish that I was more comfortable with it, but There's something
you
about
like the feel of paper.
Yeah. I know. There's just something about it that it can't quite replace what I like at the moment. Like I said, in a couple of hardware generations, I fully expect that to change. But here and now.
Yeah. Okay.
What kind of effect does that have on your sort of collaboration process? This is where we come back to me not really understanding art. or how art is made. I'm just sounding so dense now. I'm sorry, my caffeine has just run out. So if you're collaborating on a piece that Ro, you've worked on digitally, but Ted wants to work on, like, do you literally just print it out and then he does his
blue line
on it?
Yeah, yeah. Print it on blue line on the right size paper. I've forgotten what the...
It's 11 by... so yeah, we've got a giant A3 printer scanner. So then once Ro's finished with the page, then it gets printed off on 11 by 17 Bristol board.
In blue line.
In blue line. And then I ink it.
That's awesome. Oh,
that is really cool.
Then we scan it back into Photoshop, knock all the blue line out, separate the blacks out, and then that's what gets sent off to Tree once our end's done.
Wow.
Very cool. See, this is the stuff that I wanted to hear. I told them, I was like, I'm so excited. I want to know. Like, I want to know how they do things. Like, I want to know what, So you guys use Photoshop, huh? That's your...
Reluctantly.
Okay. Scanning of stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I draw in Clip Studio Pro. So, because I don't really get along particularly well with the tools in Photoshop.
Yeah. Photoshop is disgusting bloatware.
Oh,
it is. It's very heavy. It's yes, it is.
Yeah, but it handles CMYK. It allows you to export layered TIFFs. So these are the two things that we currently need to send stuff off to Tree in the format that she likes it.
Ah. Yeah, if Clip Studio had those options, we would be ditching Photoshop completely.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, Celsius, if you're listening, get it done.
Noted.
Yep.
Kind of sticking with technology, and thank you for explaining that, because that makes a lot more sense now, and I feel slightly less dense for having asked the question. Which of the many apps mentioned in Crowded or that you've added into Crowded do you think we'll see first? Obviously, there's quite a few things in here that we kind of already have in our version of reality, like apps where you can just rent your flat out to people or loan out your car.
Or your clothes. Like, I mean, most of the apps already exist.
Wait, what? There's an app that means you can loan clothes to people?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when we talked to Chris Sabella, he told us, like, most of those apps were actually real apps that already existed.
Oh, no, that's weird and creepy.
Yeah. That was part of.
With the exception of Defend and Reaper, everything else is an app that is at least based on a similar concept that you can get right now.
Is there Rent-A-Friend? Really?
Probably.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff that happens with that, Sarah. See, you don't play video games enough, so you don't see the weird side of renting people to play video games with you and such. There's an app.
What? Honey, your area of the internet is really small.
My bit of the internet has like puppy gifts in it.
Yeah, and it's really nice and it's really shiny. You should just leave it like that. Just
don't go anywhere.
Just leave it like that.
Stay in the safe space.
The one thing about the apps in Crowded so far is that I really wish I'd thought in time to persuade Chris. Because I, by the time I thought of it, it was the issue already sent off to print. But I really regret not coming up with them calling Pal Rent Pal Pay.
But, yes.
But yeah, I was by the time I thought of it, then it already gone to print. So, whatever.
Dang.
missed opportunities.
Life is full of them.
That panel actually made me really sad. The old man on the bench made me so sad.
Oh, I know. But it was nice, though, that she was sitting there hanging out with him. I thought that was kind of sweet.
But only don't think about him trying to request her and her not being available.
I know.
He's got no one to go feed the ducks with now.
Oh, find someone else. Hopefully. I mean, let's be honest. Like, there's a good chance that anyone else who responded to the ad would be a better companion.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Also, I'm going to be honest, if somebody did pay me money to sit on a bench and feed pigeons, I 100% would do that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a nice side gig, actually.
On account of not being scared of pigeons. Seagulls, not a chance. For anyone listening in Australia, those birds that you call seagulls are not actual seagulls. Ours are giant units that will rip your face off, okay? Anywho, so, Reaper. If Reaper was real, if you could actually crowdfund having somebody bumped off, do you think it would have the actually kind of positive effects that get mansplained in the second issue about how suddenly people do act like politicians do work for the people? Or do you think it would just make the world a scarier, sadder place than it already is? And have I put too much thought into the assassination app?
It's hard to say, because a lot of politicians are just crap anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think like some of that you got to say the answer is both.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, if there was a semi-legal way of having politicians bumped off for bad behaviour, there would be a lot of them that would fall in line, but I mean, part of the thing that defines politicians on both sides of the Atlantic at the moment is this unswerving arrogance in thinking they're not going to get caught.
Yep.
So I'm not sure how much it actually would change from that point of view, because they're already being found out for all sorts of ethical violations. And the common factor is, like, because given how many careers have been ended in the last decade from stuff that's coming out, then, like, you'd think that they would be, you know, more cautious, but none of them are, because they're all arrogant enough to either think they're going to survive it or that they won't get caught in the first place. So the sad thing is, it wouldn't change anywhere near as much as it ought.
That is true, actually, and it is making me think a lot more about how maybe Reaper's not that bad. Politicians do get bumped off in the near future. Wasn't me, okay? Yeah, we do end up talking about politics on this show quite a lot and trying to decide who's got it worse at the moment, Americans or Brits. I'm going to be honest, we're kind of winning at the moment.
We're all moving to Canada is pretty much what's happening. We're going to go live in Bee's house.
Yeah.
Move to Canada.
Yeah, Canada's winning right now, but it's not amazing. It's just that the race is bad.
Yeah, you don't have Boris Johnson, you'll be fine.
Not even going to talk about America. Let's not even.
Going all the way back to the first issue, one of my absolute all-time favourite pages ever in a comic book is in issue one of Crowded, which is what I call the open house page. How long does a page like that take to produce, and how do you go about designing it? I know that there was quite an interesting thread going around Twitter earlier on about the difference between how quickly a pro can do a sketch at a convention and how long an actual page takes to create. And
oh, yeah, Jesse Hamlin.
Like,
yeah. A page like this has got so much in it. Also, side note, dog peeing on the carpet still makes me laugh. I've read this book so many times. I love dog peeing on the carpet. anyway, going back to it. So how do you even go about making a page like that and putting it all together?
We made the house.
You physically made the house.
In SketchUp. But the whole thing was constructed, like, right down to the cross section of the floors. We actually, like, made the floors to regulation heights with the beams going all the way through them, and, like, the only thing we didn't put in was plumbing.
To be fair, awesome, we expected we'd be spending more time in Vita's house than we ended up doing.
Yeah. But yeah, like, we over on our Ko-fi account, for monthly subscribers, we keep putting up, you know, behind the scenes stuff, and the most recent update included a link to the SketchUp model for Vita's house, so that
you can
anyone who's subscribing to us can download the model and walk through.
That's really cool.
That's too cool. Now we're going to build the house. The more I look at this page, you know, the fact that you have put in all of that detail, and it's just one of those pages that you just look at and it blows my mind that people can sit down at a desk and create something like this. And as a non-artist, it's unfathomable for me how you could even go about doing that. But it's absolutely gorgeous. I love it.
All of the hard work was done before the drawing started.
Yeah.
All of the hard work was in the building and, like, learning enough SketchUp to use what's called section planes, where you can have, like, basically this kind of, like, giant portable field that you move, and then, like, everything beyond it just vanishes from view, and so that we could get the appropriate cross-sectioning, and, you know, all the hard work was done long before the actual arting started.
It is absolutely awesome, though. So was that a page that was actually in the script that Chris had sort of... He actually gave you a script that said, create a cutout panel of... That's really mean.
Well, it's meant to be like a... open dollhouse type thing of the house, see them doing the tour through it. But I think the only thing that wasn't in the script was dog peeing on the carpet, and that was put in because I thought there was a bit too much blank space. need a joke.
That's amazing.
I just love dog so much.
Me too.
I stayed with some family out in the States once when I was a lot younger, and they bought a Chihuahua while I was there, and genuinely the only place in the house it would go was in the bedroom that I was staying in. So I very much understand Vita saying that thing better not poop in my house. I think that's why dog peeing makes me laugh so much, because I've gone past that point in my life where a Chihuahua's
been. Sarah stayed with me. You know how I feel about that. I have three little dogs, and I am forever. How much time did I spend yelling at them? Go outside. Go make. Half my day is spent telling one of my little dogs specifically to go outside and go make, because he does not want to go outside. And he's adorable, but I love him, and he's adorable.
But indoors is warm and cozy. Just going on a tangent now about dogs.
Yeah, about dogs peeing on carpets. Anyway.
With regards to kind of page layouts and scripts and things like that, do you sort of have any kind of collaborative process, not just on Crowded, but on any of the books that you work on, to do with things like page layouts? Or is everything, does it sort of depend from writer to writer? Do they literally send you, you know, page 3, panel 1, this is what I want? Or do you just kind of get the script and make any suggestions of changes or layouts or anything like that?
We're not usually considerate enough to check with them, honestly. Like, generally speaking, if the page works for us as scripted, we'll deliver it as scripted. If it doesn't, we won't. Because the bottom line is, it's our job to make the book visually interesting, and if we don't feel that the book is going to be as interesting as we can make it by following the script, then it's a dereliction of duty to follow the script.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
When we were first talking to Chris, after we got the first script, we were like, yeah, you know, we're going to be adding more panels in, right? We're going to be cutting up some of this action and this dialogue and just spacing it out a bit more and making more work for ourselves, but it'll be good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you know.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very lucky with the people we've worked with. They're, you know, they've all been understanding about this. But yeah, we don't ask for permission to monkey around with any of it, because the simple fact is, the people we work with are writers. Like, what they do is write. if they think they know the visuals better than us, on some level, they probably ought to be drawing it. Like, if they don't trust us to know our job as well as they know theirs, then there's a problem in the relationship.
The way we split things up is also a lot to do with the fact that I have some difficulties processing certain types of information. So sometimes I can't quite figure out how to best portray a certain action just in one panel. I feel like in order to make what's happening very clear and stuff, I need to like make it into two panels. Just make something the most clear visually so that anyone can read what is actually happening.
Well, yeah, because that was our philosophy at the start, wasn't it? Yeah. The idea that as busy as it is, Crowded could be someone's first comic and they'd be able to read it.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
And I think that does make sense as well, because quite often you do get books that are drawn in a very traditional way and you do get quite a lot crammed into some panels. But for me, one thing that I love about Crowded is the actual flow of it as the story goes on, and the way that all the panels are slightly different. You don't just have that standard 6-panel grid, for example, which I just think is brilliant. There's one page that I've got open in front of me, which is in issue 5, when they're in Bifurious, which just makes me laugh every time.
Every time.
Every time. I love it so much.
Every single time. And it's the page when Vita is trying to get Charlie to come out of the club, and obviously you've got the pole dancer, and the way that the pole dancer's kind of foot actually breaks across the edge of one of the panels just makes it look so much more like you can actually see the movement in the page. And for me, that's one of the things that I really love about your artwork, is the way that it does flow like that, and you can actually, you know, you can almost see the woman spinning around the pole, which actually looks quite uncomfortable, I must admit. So you've talked about, you've been quite lucky with the people that you've worked with, and you've got on well with the people that you've worked with. Without jinxing it, do you have a dream project? So either a creative team that you want to work with, or a character that you'd love to work on, or a title that you want to work on, or even something else entirely, something that isn't necessarily comics.
We do think about this sort of stuff a bit, but like not seriously, because right now we've got, you know, we're looking at another 15 to 18 months working on Crowded, so there's not a lot of time to think about anything else in like a really serious fashion, honestly.
Yeah,
it's all kind of pie in the sky. Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, but then we've got quite a few different that'd be cool.
Exactly.
Like, none of them like, because we've got some things that we'd like to do as short projects if we've got time, a couple of, at least one long-term thing if we can get to it, but none of them are approaching concrete enough to really give brain space to right now.
Mm. You saying you've got that much time working on Crowded, that actually brings in a question that one of our listeners asked us. Kelly Edinger, who is Looks Like Awesome on Instagram, she actually popped up and said, how long will the series last? Because she loves the book and wants it to be ongoing. Obviously, because the Reaper campaign has a time frame to it, presumably Crowded has a time frame to it too. Do you already know how many issues it's going to be? Has that already been kind of planned out in advance?
Unless something disastrous happens with finances, 24 issues.
Ooh.
I want more than that.
It might kill us.
Okay. I won't have more than that then. That's awesome though, because obviously, 7 is out now, so that means that we've got a lot more to go, which does make me very, very happy, because I do love this book so much. And kind of talking about the fact that that's already plotted out, we can't really talk about Crowder without mentioning the fact that it has been optioned for a movie. How did you find out about that happening, and what was your reaction to the fact that it's been optioned, or do you not really have anything to do with that part of it?
Well, I mean, we don't have anything to do with from that point of view, because, you know, all of that's being handled by Chris's agent, not even Chris, like, you know, so it's all very removed from us. But Chris gave us a courtesy heads up once the first issue was finished that he was going to give it to his agent as part of the usual, I've got some stuff, send it out, see if anything sticks.
Mm.
And then a couple of weeks later, we got told there was interest, which was baffling.
Yeah, it was very weird. It's still not really sunk in properly, I don't think. It's no. Like...
And now the screenplay's been finished, and it still hasn't sunk in.
It's just all words, really, and it's like, I don't really mean anything. Something's happening. I'm not really directly involved. It's fine.
Basically sounds like my approach to life.
Oh, do you think it's going to be very weird to see it, somebody else's interpretation of this story?
Possibly. It's really not something we've had, and it's not something we've conceived of properly before.
No, I mean, like, this is the first creator-owned book we've ever done, so this is the first time thinking about any of that sort of stuff, and yeah, even in the abstract, and the first time that it's happened to us. It's all hard to process.
It's still weird seeing fan art.
Yeah.
I bet. Yeah, that would be interesting, eh?
Mm. It's like, hey, someone's drawn a thing, they like it. Yay.
That's awesome.
Is that kind of quite complimentary when you see people doing fan art, or do you kind of look at it and think, oh, you've drawn that person wrong, or you've presented them differently to how I would, or is that just the way that my brain would see it?
Well, that was a weird voice. It's really good seeing how people like what we've done enough to want to make their own version of it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you can't see it as anything other than flattering, really. Like, if what we've made is interesting or exciting or enjoyable enough for people that they go out and draw it themselves, that's awesome.
Mm. That's a really great perspective.
Mm-hmm. Is that also kind of the way that you see it when people cosplay as your characters?
Yes.
Because I've only seen one set of cosplays,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I've only seen one set so far.
But it was like, another. Wow. Yes.
Look out for our pictures from New York City Comic Con.
Please do tag us in.
Oh, we will. Oh, of course. I've already got a pink wig in my Amazon cart, okay? I'm ready to go.
Nice.
Honestly, I'm not sure what we would do if we ever saw cosplayers of our characters in real life. Probably just a lot of pointing and going, ah!
Yeah.
Kind of following on from that, do you go to a lot of conventions?
No. I really don't. We wish we could, but generally the one we do is Thought Bowl.
Yeah, we try to be there every year, but the simple economics of it is going to cons costs money and comics don't make much.
Mm. Mm.
So
I'm eternally disappointed in a friend of mine for scheduling her wedding the same weekend as Thought Bubble this year. This being probably the first year I would ever have been able to go to Thought Bubble.
Oh.
I did ask if she could change her wedding. She gave me the look that people give you when you ask questions like that. I took it as a no.
Yeah.
It's a source of disappointment to me. Kind of sticking with sort of conventions and the whole sort of promotion idea. When you do a book like Crowded, which is obviously a creator-owned book, do you get pressure put on you by the publisher to actually promote the book on social media and by recording podcasts and interviews like this one? Or is that something that you just have to do as part of your role as a creator on a book?
The latter, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't actually think we've had any talk from Image or anything like that about saying you must do anything.
Oh no, they're very hands off. That's the whole point of Image. But the problem with that is it also means, I mean, like, but it's not just from Image. You know, you regularly see creators working at Marvel and DC who have to go out and go on podcasts and build, because the simple fact is, comics is a really weird publishing subgenre where none of the publishers take any responsibility for the books selling.
Mm.
Like, it's not like it really isn't like book market actual novels or whatever, where publishers have to a greater or lesser extent a PR budget or, you know, all that sort of stuff. Comics doesn't have much of one for any level of thing. Like, generally speaking, comics is that kind of proper classic conservative idea of marketing, and that they only pay money to advertise surefire winners, which
that seems pointless.
Yeah.
People gonna buy that anyway.
Yeah.
If you listen to the main TC podcast, I complain about the marketing at DC and Marvel all the time.
Yeah.
I consistently like, what are you people doing? Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? So.
Yeah, it's a real shame. Like, but the thing is, it isn't just them either. Like, I don't know of any comics company that does, you know, that has a solid PR game at all. I mean, we're at the point where there are like straight up people who are freelance PR agents that are getting hired like freelance editors for comics, which is nuts. But
that's an interesting gig. I can't even imagine how that would work.
So, kind of as a follow up to that, what sort of effect does that have on your work as artists? Does it mean that when there's time that you could be or should be working on books or projects, does that kind of take time out from that, or is it just something that you consider you sort of have to do as part of your role of a creative team? You also have to always have that kind of background, must push the book, must keep promoting it kind of thing.
I don't know about it for you, but
I'm very bad at this.
Yeah, like, certainly for me it's not so much about promoting the book, because like there's only so much you can do that before you just turn into a shill account which loses people's interest. But I do spend a lot more time than I think I would like in an ideal world being on Twitter trying to build up a following for my account, so that then when I do the occasional bits of crowded promotion or whatever,
can I actually pay attention?
Yeah, exactly. So it's not that I spend a lot of time promoting Crowded, but I have to spend a very large amount of time being extremely online to make sure that, like, I keep momentum going on there and get to the point where if I say, hey, buy my book, there might be a reasonable number of people who will actually listen.
Yeah, no,
I'm still not very good at it, mind, but
yeah. Well, social media, like sitting on social media, this is actually what I do for a living. I hate social media for myself because I have to do it for other people every day. And it does take a lot of time. It's like a game. It's not surefire. And people think like, well, I put up a picture, why am I'm having an issue? You know what I mean? I've had clients like, I put up a picture, why doesn't everybody like it? I'm like, it doesn't work that way. So this is not the way it works. It's not just if you throw up a picture, everyone's going to immediately like it. Like you said, it takes time. You kind of have to like give them bits and pieces. You don't want a shell account. If you just have ads all the time, people aren't going to like it. It really is. I can only imagine what it is for you guys to create these accounts for yourselves and try to promote your product. It's insane.
It's an entire lifestyle, and one I wish I didn't have to have.
Yeah. You don't got to tell me. Like I said, I do it for other people every day. It's mind numbing. It's very mind numbing.
That's kind of the joy of being able to do the podcast, is being able to promote the kind of books that we love, and you know, hopefully getting more readers and getting books like Crowded in front of people that maybe wouldn't have looked at it. And as I said before, I spend a lot of time in my local comic shop, and I am the weird person that will give you recommendations of books even if you haven't asked for them necessarily. But it's got to
that's part of comic shop culture. You know, having someone in there giving you recommendations. Listen, like I said, I work there. Like, you are not there's plenty of yous. Don't worry. Someone's always giving a recommendation.
That's why you go to a comic book shop, right? Like, you know, you can go to Comixology if you know what you're looking for.
Want to go. There's like a certain culture. We always joke and like said it was like tending bar. more than like being like at a retail store, because like I you know everybody's lives, you know what they read, you have recommendations, you put things in bags, you have pull lists, you have to know, you know what I mean, oh you read this book, so I threw this book in. It was really like, oh you like this drink, so I'll mix you this one. It was really, we always joke and say that it was tending bar, not actually selling comics. So
it's actually a great analogy.
Yeah,
I feel slightly less bad about being the weirdo in the comic book shop now.
No, don't feel bad. Don't feel bad at all.
Awesome. Well, thank you very, very much for talking to us today, Ted and Ro. That's kind of gone through the questions that I had. I don't know, Jess and Bronwyn, if you ladies had anything else that you wanted to chip in with before we let them get on with the rest of their Sunday.
I think you covered everything pretty yeah. significantly.
I do have a tendency to write lots of questions. one thing that we do like to, or that I do like to do, is to kind of recommend other books around whatever it is we're talking about. So I was kind of looking at my own shelves and thinking, right, if somebody came to me and I lent them Crowded and they liked it, what else would I recommend? And a few other books that I thought people might also like if they like Crowd that I came up with were Wicked and Divine by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, which, as anyone who listens to Talking Comics will know, is Joey's favourite book ever. But again, it kind of has that blend of comedy and gory that you don't expect, but you do get, as does I Hate Fairyland by Scotty Young. And also Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. That was another book that I thought, yeah, if I lent Crowded to someone and they liked it, I reckon they'd like that one too. So thank you very, very much, Ted and Ro, for taking time out of your Sunday and coming to talk to us. We were due to have Jeremy Whitley on to talk to us today. He couldn't join us. He will hopefully be joining us shortly, though. So we should be talking to him about Unstoppable Wasp fairly soon. But for our August podcast, we are going to be talking about Story Killer by Kelly Thompson. If there is anything that anyone out there would like to talk to us about relating to Crowded, or you just want to say hello, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. We are at Valhalla Ladies. Or you can email ladiesofvalhalla@gmail.com. And you can also find all of our previous episodes and our weekly parent podcast, Talking Comics, on Spotify now. Ro, I know you said that you're not very good about social media and you don't particularly like it, but if people do want to reach out to you on social media or find out more about your work, where can they find you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Rosy Tinted Specs, and it's R-O-S-Y Tinted Specs. Or I have an Instagram, which is rostein01, or there's our website, which is brantonstein.com.
Awesome. And what about you, Ted?
I won't bother giving you the Instagram because I'm terrible at neglecting it constantly. So I'm just on Twitter at 10, so the T-E-N underscore bandits.
And I have to ask, what's the story behind 10 bandits?
About, hang on, I have to think now. Is the old
decade?
Longest? Yes, well, yeah, but it's 11 years old this year, in fact, as a name. Because 11 years ago, I got into a car accident where someone drove into the back of me, wrecked my car, and gave me whiplash. So, in order to get my insurance claim validated, I had to go to a court-appointed doctor, which wasn't my usual.
The story gets funnier, I swear.
And so then, like, you know, I was told by my insurance company that they'd been notified and they'd call me to set up an appointment. And then, so when I got the phone call, I answered it, and the secretary at the reception must have been, I don't know, sounded some sort of Eastern European. And she said, "Hello, is Mr. Ten Bandits?" And so,
oh no!
And it stuck.
That's amazing.
That is amazing
for everything, but especially the accent at the end.
Yeah, that was probably quite bad, so I apologise.
Oh no, don't! My accents are terrible, and I do them often.
They're very entertaining,
but no good reason. Bronwyn, where can our lovely listeners find you?
You can find me on all the things at ShinyBabyB.
And Jessica, where can you be found?
Everywhere at Jorsica.
Personally, I'm on all the various social media channels under the name Geek Country Lady. Don't forget to check out talkingcomicbooks.com for news, reviews and articles about comics, video games, TV shows and much more. We have podcasts of every flavour, including Talking Comics, Monthly Reset and Adventure, the D&D podcast. Thank you once more and we'll be back in your ears again soon. Right, so probably should do some introductions. I'm Sarah. I'm the English one, so it's very easy to identify me out of the three of us. Bronwyn is the lady who plays ball hockey. She's Canadian. And Jess is clearly American because she's mentioned a six pack of beer, 4th of July, and a hamburger so far. I went to the gym for an hour and a half this morning and I'm not planning on napping. I'd like to point that one out.
I mean, you're crazy.
Oh, that's roughly 90 minutes too much in a gym.
We tell her this all the time. She doesn't listen.
But if I'm going to effectively cosplay Vita in October, I have to do an hour and a half at the gym, okay?
I'm already Charlie.
Fair. I'm just saying, there is a plan for New York Comic Con this year, and it involves me having some ripped upper arms.